reminder from last time. Remember last time we wrap up St. Francis de Sales' introduction to the devout life. He mentioned about that we have to renew our resolutions regularly, and also to make examination of our life, and also reflection on holy reality, truth. And the three resolutions he asks us to renew are, first, that we, you know, avoid, reject all mortal sin. You know, that's really important. And second, that we dedicate ourselves, give ourselves to God completely. And third, if we have the misfortune of sinning, we, by the grace of God, get up immediately, ask for forgiveness, you know, contrition and confession. So that's the three resolutions he asks us to make and renew from time to time. And then we talk about last time, you know, we start the book, you know, Journal of the Soul. A Journal of a Soul of the Pope St. John the 23rd. We talk about he was really pious and holy, even in his teenage year already. And so he was observing the little rules given to him by a spiritual director. He handwritten the rules, and he kept that rule even as Pope. And the rule have 8 pages in English, you know, that's including spiritual exercise for every day, every week, every month, every year. In the month of May, examination of conscience, and also thing to do at all times. So it's a really detailed rule of life. So last time we talked about the importance to have a rule of life, that we have our prayer every day, set prayer, that, you know, every day we do it every day, because, you know, think about that, you know, you cannot eat all your whole week meal in one day, you cannot do your exercise all whole month in one day, you cannot sleep one day for your whole week, you have to do it every day. So, you know, for our prayer life, we need to be consistent too. We do something every day. And my suggestion is maybe the prayer we do as a prayer meeting, we can do it on a daily basis. You know, 5 decades of the Rosary and the Divine Mercy as the basic, you know, starting point. And then I also mentioned, you know, the Blue Army do have 4 things the member do promise Our Lady to do. 3 of them is a daily practice. You know, the 4 things are to offer up every day the sacrifices demanded by our daily duty. The second one is to pray at least 5 decades of the Rosary every day, to meditate on the mystery as well. And the third one is to wear the scapula of Mount Carmel as a profession of the promise. And also to do the first Saturday devotion. But also we mentioned about the rule of life, you know, written by St. Maximin Kolbe for those who consecrate themselves to Our Lady. And there are 10 points in his rule of life. You know, remember those 10 points? You know, one is the desire to be a saint, right? And then the second one is to save souls through the Immaculate. And then another one is to avoid not only mortal sin, but all deliberate venial sin. And remind you last time, we mentioned John the 23rd make a promise at the age of 19 that he would not commit any deliberate venial sin. He make a solemn promise to the Sacred Heart at the young age of 19, you know. And so the other prayer group, you know, when we talk about that, they say, oh, we're 69, we still want to have fun, you know, and 19 already, they can promise. You know, so to avoid sin, you know, and then the 4th rule is that do not allow, you know, evil to be there without reparation and destroy the evil, but also do not allow good not to bear fruit and to increase. And then another rule is to obey the will of God, you know, through the Immaculate and knowing that we are the instrument of God. And then another rule is about, you know, that when we do things, you know, we have to focus on what we are doing, but not thinking about other things, either it's good or bad, but think about what you are doing. And then another one is about, you know, we have to have peaceful and benevolent actions, you know, so that's rule number 8. And then, or seven, I forgot what was it now. And then another one he mentioned is that we have to have preparation, action, and conclusion. You know, preparation, action, and conclusion. And then he also mentioned about that we belong to the Immaculate, and so whatever we do, you know, we have to really belong totally to Our Lady. You know that she is the one who will make use of us. You know, so to belong totally to Our Blessed Lady. I forgot how many I mentioned already. Is that nine?
A lot.
Okay. Anyhow, that's all I can remember. I think I missed one. I forgot which one, but I think I do miss one. Oh boy, I missed one. Oh, bad on me. Oh. Huh?
Preserve order.
Oh, preserve order, and order will preserve you. That's an important one. Good, number 10 is there. Thank you. Preserve order, and order will preserve you. So, you know, I say a daily schedule is important, right? Preserve order, and order will preserve you. So, all 10 points are there. Thank you. Now, okay, so that's the 10 point of St. Maximilian Kolbe. It's good to remember that. And so, and then when we think about, you know, John the 23rd, you know, Angelo, his name before becoming Pope, he was really dedicated as a seminarian, and then he studied first in his home diocese, and then in the year 1901 to 1903, he studied in Rome. But in the year 1901 November until 1902 November, he was at the military service. He called that year his Babylonian captivity. You know, I don't think he liked it too much. You know, so he was away for 1 year for military service because that, and for in Italy, that's the requirement for young people. Thankfully, it's not in Canada. So he did that, you know, for a year. And then in the year 1903, it was an important year for him, because he made his lifelong commitment, you know. Now, nowadays, if you become a priest, your lifelong commitment start when you ordain a deacon. That's your lifelong commitment. Before that, people can live any time without much consequences. But once you make your lifelong commitment, that's a lifelong commitment. That's when you are a deacon. In the old days, the lifelong commitment made a little bit earlier. It was when a person is become subdeacon. So that is the time when the man, you know, commit to celibacy, but also to the recitation of the divine office, to pray the breviary, the divine office, every day. So that's the commitment made when a person becomes subdeacon. So basically, in the old ritual, the bishop would say, you know, up to now, you know, if you want, you can go back and pursue, you know, worldly thing. But once you step forward, then you belong to God. Then you don't pursue worldly thing anymore. You are consecrated. So the bishop would say, so you still have time to think. If you want to go back, you can go. If not, come forward. You know, some words like that. So it was a solemn moment when the person come forward to be a subdeacon. So that's the lifelong commitment. So he became subdeacon in April, and before that he was making a retreat, you know, and that retreat he wrote about holiness in his journal. He wrote about holiness of the saints does not depend on anything sensational, but on the little things which seem but trifles in the eyes of the world. In this respect, Jesus Christ is in the first 30 years of his life offers me a whole series of shining examples. And then he also wrote, my great book, from which henceforth I must learn with greater care and love the lessons of divine wisdom, is the crucifix. I must make a habit of judging all human concerns and knowledge in the light of the principle of this great book. So that's the resolution he made, to be faithful in little things, to be holy, and always look at Jesus crucified. So that year, on April 11, he became a subdeacon. It was around Easter time. I think it was actually it was on Easter day. I'm not quite sure, but it's either the day before or after Easter, or actually on Easter day that he became a subdeacon. And then later on that year, on December 18, he was ordained a deacon. Now, deacon is part of the holy order. So it's a deacon, priest, bishop, the three degrees of holy order. So he became a deacon on September 18. So again, before that, he made a long retreat from that December. December 18 was the ordination. So December 9 to 18, he made a retreat. During the retreat, he thought about many different things. But one thing he thought about was that he thought about the possibility of him going to hell. You know, and then he wrote, "Among the things I find impossible to conceive is this, the possibility of my soul one day falling into hell. I cannot think of this without being struck with terror. And yet, there is a place there for me too." So he's talking about, you know, if he became lukewarm, he was almost like at the verge of going there. And, you know, and one sin should push me over. You know, one mortal sin would bring a person to hell, as might happen to any other poor sinner. And so he continued to write, "Oh, how wretched I am. This fear alone must keep me humble. I too might fall, and yet I hardly ever give it a thought. My Lord, I say it once again, if only you will save me from that place, I am willing to do anything, even to let myself be trampled on like the dust of the high road. Burn me with the flame of your love." Now, of course, the reality of hell do change the hearts of people. You know, we think about the children of Fatima when they were shown the vision of hell in July 1917. They were quite changed, you know, and Jacinta especially would be willing to make a lot of sacrifices, even though she was a small little girl, for the conversion of sinners so that they won't go to hell. And St. Faustina also pointed out that when she was being shown of hell, you know, she was being told a lot of people go there are the ones who do not believe in hell at all. So it doesn't mean that you don't think about that it won't happen. You know, people don't think about that it's the one that really likely will go there. You know, St. Faustina pointed out. So it's important for us to have that healthy sense of fear, because, you know, hell is a possibility. And one of the story of Holy Soul is that one of the saints, he actually raised a dead man to life to testify in the court for him. And after that, the saints, you know, say that, you know, if you want, I can pray to God that you can live here more on earth. But the dead person say he would not want to live more because he is in purgatory. He would prefer to be there than on earth, because on earth you have the chance to go to hell, but in purgatory you have no chance to go to hell.
That's very true.
So he would prefer to be in purgatory than be coming back to earth. So, you know, so souls in purgatory have that joy, you know, of the certainty of not going to hell. And of course, to put it positively, it's the certainty of going to heaven. And so, you know, that fear of hell should also warn us, you know. Give you an example. St. Teresa of Avila, she was also being shown the vision of hell, and she was being shown a place in hell for her, St. Teresa of Avila. You know, it was given to her as a warning, because as a nun, she was pretty lukewarm. She concerned about, you know, how other people think about her. She wants to be liked by other people, and so she concerned more about other people, about her friends, than about loving God. And so she was being warned, you know, this is where you are going if you continue your way. Now, doesn't mean at that point she had mortal sin, but basically God was telling her, if you continue your lukewarm way of life, you will eventually commit mortal sin, and then that you will go to hell. And so John the 23rd, he was thinking about, you know, if I become lukewarm, you know, I too will go to hell. And so he knew that as a priest, you know, and of course now to be a deacon first, and then but later on as a priest, it's so important that he would not become lukewarm. Because when he become lukewarm, it's so much more easy to commit mortal sin, and then it's so easy, if you commit even one mortal sin unrepented, the person will go to hell. So that's is something that, you know, we think about Saint Teresa was a changed woman. You know, she became a saint. And now we know for sure she didn't go to that place she saw, because the church declared her as a saint that guaranteed that she is in heaven now. John the 23rd, you know, this year we know for sure that he is in heaven because he is declared a saint. And so that means, you know, that healthy a sense of fear of hell do help those people, you know, John the 23rd and Teresa of Avila, to actually not going to hell, but on the really opposite, they go to heaven. So that's something for us to think about, you know, that because there is the possibility of hell, and you know, God saved us from going there by giving us grace, but we have to cooperate. We have to cooperate. We have to really seeking for God, you know, willing to love Him above all. And sometimes when we look around the world, you know, we wonder, how many people really seeking God, and how many people really seriously thinking about Him or searching for Him? You know, a lot of people searching for wealth and money and pleasure. You know, they do that, you know, really conscientiously and purposely. But really, really feel you think that, you know, people are actually purposely seeking for God. And some people, they don't even want to mention religion at all, you know. So, you know, that's why, of course, charity demands us, you know, to work for our salvation, you know, but also to do our best to work for the salvation of others, to help people not to go to hell, but to go to heaven. And then John the 23rd was ordained a priest the next year in 1904 on August 10th. So his anniversary is coming up, you know, close to your day of going to the monastery. And so he, in his retreat, he wrote about detachment. You know, he wrote about, you know, the saints practice holy detachment. They were willing to listen to the voice of God who spoke to them as He speaks to me. They did not measure what they had to do by considering their pride, but cast themselves blindly into all that God wanted them to do. And so he really, you know, want to be completely, you know, obedient to the command of God, and also he want to abandon to the will of his superior. So he would be willing to go wherever he would be sent as a priest. Now, remember, he was studying in Rome, so he was ordained in Rome. And when he was in his ordination ceremony, he looked up and then he caught sight of a statue of Our Lady, that she seemed to be smiling at him and give him a really sense of peace, and also inspire him with generosity and confident spirit. And then that day of his ordination day, in the afternoon, he was by himself. You know, he was so, you know, he was alone, he wrote, alone with my God, who had raised me so high, alone with my thoughts, my resolves, and the joys of my priesthood. I went out utterly absorbed in my Lord, as if there were no one else in Rome. I visited the churches to which I was most devoted, the altars of my most familiar saints, the images of Our Lady. They were very short visits. It seems that evening, as if I had something to say to all those holy ones, and as if every one of them had something to say to me. And indeed, it was so. And so, and then the next day, he celebrated his first Mass at St. Peter Basilica. And so he wrote, I said the votive Mass of St. Peter and St. Paul. Ah, the joys of that Mass. I remember that among the feelings with which my heart was overflowing, the most powerful of all was a great love for the Church, for the cause of Christ, for the Pope, and a sense of total dedication to the service of Jesus and of the Church, and of an intention, indeed a sacred oath, of alliance to the chair of St. Peter, and of unwearying work for souls. So that same day, he was granted audience, you know, a special audience by Pope St. Pius X. And so the young priest told Pius X the feelings, the intention he had during that first Mass. And Pope Pius X replied saying, well done, my boy, this is what I like to hear. And I will ask the good Lord to grant a special blessing on these good intentions of yours, so that you may be really be a priest after his own heart. I bless all your other intentions too, and all the people who are rejoicing at this time for your sake. Few days later, on the Feast of Assumption, August 15, he went back to his hometown to celebrate Mass. It was one of his happiest days in his life. And so we see that, you know, as a subdeacon, before that, he made the retreat thinking about holiness, you know, in little things, and look at Jesus on the cross. As a deacon, before that, he made the retreat thinking about the possibility of going to hell, and so to remind himself not to fall into lukewarmness. And then before a priest, he made the retreat and thinking about detachment, willing to go wherever he would be sent by the church. And then now, as a priest, he's supposed to be at the next meeting, but because we have our day trip, no meeting on August 4th, so I'm doing half of the meeting here for next time. You know, this is half of the meeting for the other prayer group. So he, as a newly ordained priest, he made a couple resolutions. Okay, and so he made more than these two, but I mentioned the two that may be also for us a bit of a imitation, you know, that we can follow more closer. You know, he said, throughout the morning, from the first moment I awaken until sometime after Mass, I will apply myself exclusively to spiritual thoughts and occupations, vocal prayer, spiritual reading, meditation, that was the recital of the divine office, and so on. So he set aside the best time of the day, right in the morning until sometime after Mass, to be exclusively for spiritual activities, you know. So sometimes maybe, you know, people get up, the first thing they do is, oh, open the computer, look at newspaper, you know, or watch television, you know. But, you know, he will be the first moment until sometime after Mass, you know, that will be in cool couple hours, you know, at least, to be exclusively on spiritual things. Good way to start the day. As a priest, I would say that's the best moment in my day, you know, to by the time you get up until after Mass. Of course, I'm in a parish that is have the blessing. Mass is late at 9 o'clock, so people won't bother me until later on, you know. So I do have more time to be able to pray before Mass and then also after Mass. And then another one is that my most important duty will be to pay my daily visit to the Blessed Sacrament with the greatest fervor. I owe everything to the Blessed Sacrament and to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, so I will have a most loving devotion to the Blessed Sacrament. So he really see that as a really, he take that seriously. Every day he make a good visit to Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament. Now, in the first around 10 years of his priestly life, you know, he was actually the secretary of the bishop. So he was the secretary of the, because they got a new bishop in 1905, and so he was bishop the bishop secretary until 1914. You know, when the bishop died in August, you know, the bishop died August 22nd. So it was at the beginning of World War II, you know, when the bishop died, and so his last word to Angelo, you know, the future of John the 23rd, would be, "Angelo, pray for peace." The bishop died of cancer, so he died a bit of a younger age, you know. So then also during that time, he also got quite other work to do as well. Beyond being secretary of the bishop, he also involved in some academic work, like teaching in the seminary, and also he would be editing the 5 volumes of the Acts of St. Charles Borromeo, visit diocese, you know. So he also edit those 5 volumes about St. Charles Borromeo. And then he also helped the bishop to edit, you know, the letter of the bishops. And also he was also the editor of the official, paper, whatever is from the diocese. So he was doing quite a few of things, you know, given to him assignment. And then he wrote on a retreat in 1912. You know, remember, when he became a bishop and he became a pope, his motto is obedience and peace. So he always, you know, follow God's will by doing whatever his superiors asked him to do. He was a really obedient priest. So he wrote something like that in 1912. I must not try to find or follow new ways of doing good. I live under obedience, and obedience has already overburdened me with so many occupations. And so basically, he was already having so many things, his shoulder also started to, you know, sag, you know, it's just getting heavy. So he got so many little jobs given to him. But I am willing to bear this and other burdens if the Lord so desires. My rest will be in heaven. These are the years for hard work. My bishop set me an example. Since he does more than I will be most careful never to waste a single moment. So he was a hardworking priest, really obey, you know. And then also he wrote about, I find it humiliating, but it is my duty to insist again on the resolution already made about being absolutely faithful to my rule of life. So getting up at 5:30, then meditation, the bishop mass, my mass, so he will attend the bishop mass and then he will say mass himself. Thanksgiving, the hour, that means to pray the divine office. Brief but frequent visits to the Blessed Sacrament. Vespers, that means evening prayer, after the a brief siesta, after the nap, okay? Siesta. A devout recital of the rosary. After supper, matins and lauds. In the old days, people anticipate the office of reading and even morning prayer the day before. That's a common practice. Without fail, and a rather longer visit to the Blessed Sacrament, some spiritual reading before falling asleep. These are the fundamental points. They are my lifeline. So, you know, he know that, you know, as a priest, those are his lifeline, you know. And so true, you know, as a priest, those are our lifeline. You know, to say the divine office well, you know, to do mass well, to say the prayer well, you know, those are lifelines for every priest. At his 10th anniversary as a priest, you know, he wrote that my dominant thought in my joy at having accomplished 10 years as a priest is this: I do not belong myself or to others. I belong to my God for life and death. And then he also, you know, always try to remember four things from the book of Thomas A Kempis. Which book is written by him again?
Imitation
of Christ. Okay, the first point is seek to do another's will rather than your own. Second, choose always to have less rather than more. Third, always take the lowest place so as to be inferior to everyone. And fourth, always desire and pray that the will of God may be wholly fulfilled in you. And he found that those four things, if he followed that, he said that will be bringing him peace of mind, preserve peace of mind. So remember, later on as a bishop, his motto is, again, obedience and peace. So as a young priest already, you know, because you think about a young priest, he would be at that time, you know, think about 1881 when he was born. So 1911, he will be around 30 years of age. So his 10th anniversary, he will be only 33. So 33, a young age, even younger than me right now. Oh, but older than Melissa, you know. But I think many of us, you know, 33, he was quite obedient, died to himself, and always aimed at obedience and peace. You know,
when he was ordained,
yeah, because, you know, you remember he entered the minor seminary, and actually he completes his theological study like 19 years old already. But when he went to Rome to study, because he was so young, they made him learn study more. Almost like had to restudy his theology because he was quite young. So if you're thinking about, you know, 1904 that he was ordained, he would be 23. Because 1881 when he was born, right? But I think, yeah, he would be almost 23 because he was born in October. If I'm not mistaken, and then he was ordained in August, you know, 1881 to 1904. Yeah, he would be 23. I think in those days people can be ordained a bit younger. You know, like Father Aloysius Ip, you know, he was ordained also young too in China. You know, the elderly priest who died in 1996. I remember, yeah, he died in November 10th, yeah, 1996. So he was ordained quite young, you know. In those days, you can be ordained younger. Nowadays, I think you need to be at least 25, and most people ordained when they are 26, because you think about, you do some math, you finish high school in 18, if you go right to the seminary, you have 8 years of study, so that, you know, 18 plus 8, that make 26. So that's why my classmate, like Father Justin Wong, you know, he was ordained at 26.
Justin,
huh? Yeah, he is ordained 26. Because that's the youngest nowadays you can ordain, basically. Of course, canon law, I think it's 25. But I think for if you go out to seminary after high school, we're 26. So he is our baby, in our five of us.
You guys are going to have a reunion of 10 years ordination.
We have reunion every year anyway. We get together every year in a secret place by ourselves, the five of us.
is there a secret knock?
The 10 years will be
a secret handshake.
Invite us early.
Yeah, 10 years most likely. I would do one myself at St. Anthony. It will be a Monday. Most likely, I might go. I'm ordained at St. Anthony Church. I'm ordained at St. Anthony. So mostly I would do one.
Because
your name but is the party will be at Precious
Blood. Huh?
The party is at Precious
Blood. Maybe it's St. Anthony too. Maybe.
Okay.
Well, yeah. We'll talk about that, okay. You know, when it's come. It's still 2 years from now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's still two
which
years from now.
Which
the one in Marple, in Vancouver. I'm ordained there, in that church. Now, Father Justin is the pastor, so it's easy.
Yeah.
I want to celebrate. It's easy.
Yeah, he's so good. That's true. Unless the bishop moves him.
Huh? Oh, really unlikely. He just become pastor this summer. He just become pastor on July 10th.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's now a baby pastor.
Baby pastor.
Yeah. Now, you know, I find that there's a beautiful book, you know, called The Priest for the Third Millennium, written by Cardinal Bishop Dolan, of Timothy Dolan of New York. He was rector of the North American College for years. And so this is the talk when he gave the seminarian. You know, seminarian used to have conference. You know, when you become a monk, a conference is normal. You know, the monk gives conference all the time to them, and other give conference to the monks. And so he gives conference to the seminarians on a regular basis. And so those are some of the, he has some really good idea. You know, you talk about, you know, joy, you talk about lots of topics, prayer, and you talk about priestly zeal, you know. Just want to share a little bit, you know, because at my ordination, you know, I don't know who were there, some of you were there, the bishop preached about 3 points. I don't remember all what he said, you know, but I remember 3 points. He talked about the joy, a man of prayer, a man of joy, and a man of service.
Rewind that tape.
Huh? I don't know if anybody recalled it at all. I know a lot of pictures were taken on that night, you know. Actually, there were two newspapers were there, three newspapers. My audience, but on newspaper, it's on the Vancouver Sun. It was on the BC Catholic, also in the Chinese newspaper. It's the three newspaper got my ordination.
Five?
Yeah.
Why?
Because there's five of us that year. Yeah. So that's why it was a bit more attention from the people. And for the five, I was the first one got ordained, so that's why I got extra attention that way. So, yeah. Yeah. So, anyhow, he talked about joy. He talked about an interesting story. You know, he said, you know, he always liked to use story. He said when he was a priest, he was helping the Mother Teresa nuns, you know, to run a hospice for AIDS patients. And so he was doing the Holy Week liturgy. And on Good Friday, after the liturgy, he brought the crucifix to the room for the patient to kiss. And then he mentioned there was a man who asked him to come. And then the nun stopped and said, "Be careful. That man is exceptionally violent." And then he said he even tried to fight the nuns. The thing about you being beaten by somebody with AIDS is pretty, pretty bad. Mm-hmm. So he keep on motioning so he could go and then extend the crucifix And the man kissed not only the feet, but the face of Jesus, and then he felt that exhausted. And next day, the nun said, the man asked for you again. And so with two nuns, a bodyguard, they went there. Father Donan get closer, and the man say, I want to be baptized. And then he say, why? And then he said, he know nothing about Christian faith or Catholic faith, he say, but he hate religion all his life. But all I do know is that for 3 months, I've been here dying. These sisters are always happy. When I curse them, they look at me with compassion in their eyes. Even when they clean up my vomit, help his sores, change his, thing, they were smiling. And when they spoon feed me, there is a radiance in their eyes. All I know is that they have joy and I do not. When I ask them in desperation why they are so happy, all the answer is Jesus. I want this Jesus. Baptize me and give me this Jesus. Give me joy. So Bishop Dolan wrote, never as a priest gave me so much satisfaction to baptize, anoint, and give first communion to someone. And then he died the next morning at 3:15 on Easter morning. So when we are joyful, it draws people to the faith. It's a good witness to people. And also, Bishop Dolan one time when he was a priest, he went with another priest to a tour to Germany. And the tour guide didn't know that they were Catholics. And so she was talking about, now it will seem different now. In the north, in Germany, people work hard, a lot of industry there, people are more serious. In the south, you can see, look at the flower, the painted home, the smiling people, lots of kids, good food, dancing, song, lots of beer. And they say, the north is Protestant and the south is Catholic. So the good Catholic do not have to enjoy life, because religion doesn't mean that you are always gloomy,
and boring,
and there's a joy, a joy can attract people. So be a man of joy, be a people of joy. And then he pointed out that quite often when we have that. Joy is like peace is the fruit of charity. So basically our spiritual joy comes from, 5 things. First is that we are really convinced that God loves us. And second one, we are really convinced that God loves us so much that he allowed us to share his divine life because of sanctifying grace. And then he also mentioned as a priest when he taught one-on-one with a man, they went through a lot of intellectual questions, lots of challenges. At the end, he said, there's one point I find it's hard to believe. He expressed something like confession or real presence. They say, right from the beginning, you mentioned something like sanctifying grace. Is that really true? He said, yes, it's true. It's too good to be true because it's a doctrine that we share in the divine life of God. So they, but it's true. That's something that should make us joyful. And then also, another joy is trust. When we trust in divine prophet and that God looking after us. And the final one, he mentioned 4 things actually. The other one is prayer. Because prayer is exercise of trust and hope, but also is to help us to have that close communion with God. He also mentioned about something about, the danger of joy, like self-pity, worry, thinking happiness depends on something outside us, like a successful title, jobs, material things, and then complain, people. And then he said that he told seminarians, you will discover that 2 kinds of priests, those who work hard, try their best, and are not afraid of risk or failure. And then those who sit back and complain. pointed out how it should have been done. In other words, you have got the guy playing hard on the field, and then the guy is criticizing in the sidelines. I hope up to God that you are among the first group. Okay, so he is pretty good. Huh? And then he also mentioned about something like the liturgy of the hour, so the prayer, you know, man of prayer. He also mentioned another story. He always liked to laugh up with a story in a conference. He said, as a priest again, when he was a priest at St. Louis Diocese. So one time he was visiting a really wealthy, prominent, influential businessman. And now he got a really big surgery coming up. So he got five sons, all are businessmen with him. So he told them, he directed them all, you know, and say, okay, L, you are my lottery, notary. So you immediately check my will, you know, make sure it's up to date, in order, okay? And then another, Michael, you are an accountant. Go through my books and ensure everything is no gap and no danger signal. Oh, Larry, you are my investor. We will, okay, everything is stable and in order. Oh, Joseph, you look after mom and sister. They may be really upset and you are close to them. Stay in touch with the hospital and keep your family informed. Tony, you're my insurance, you know. Make sure I'll cover being my recovery. Okay, take care of all the expense.
Did he have children, or did he have, like,
five sons, okay? And then, all were taking notes, and then Father Dolan asked, and what am I to do? And then all the 12 eyes looking at him, all surprised that he even asked a question. And then the father responds quickly, why, Father, you pray, of course. And all of a sudden, so he say, freeze. It's official prayer, you know. We should be, our job is to pray. So, he mentioned it's so important, you know, to do the divine office, to do it well and conscientiously. St. Joseph of Cupertino, when he was asked how to reform the clergy, he said that, you know, have them do two things, to say Mass worthily and to say the divine office well. Now, remember, Pope Pius X gave audience to the young John the 23rd when he was a newly ordained priest. When Pius X was a bishop, he went to be a bishop. That diocese, the priests were known to be lazy, you know, and also the priests there, they also, you know, rebellious, scandalous in their behavior. And so the Holy See told him his duty is the spiritual renewal of his priest. That's why he's sent to that diocese. It's not an easy job. So the other bishop nearby handled problem with suspend the priest, publicly chastise them, transfer them, you know, doing a lot of things heavy-handed. So when he was having his first meeting with the priest, all the priests were pretty resistant and unfriendly because expecting some heavy-handed policy going to come down. And the future saint was saying to the priest, brothers, I will make a deal. Before you leave this room, I want every one of you to promise me to my face that you will do three things. Celebrate Mass every day, pray your office daily, and make a good confession monthly. So that was a sign of relief. And so they got off easy. So they all made the promise. But 10 years later, when he left to be the patriarch of Venice, the diocese was revived and the priests are all zealous striving for holiness. Because he reformed them by just asking them to do those three things. So, you know, the divine office is a powerful prayer. You know, in the Roman office, we have the office of reading, and the morning prayer. And then we have the poor clare. They also do the 9 o'clock, noon, and 3 o'clock prayer. And then there is the evening prayer and the night prayer. And so it's something that, you know, is the official prayer of the church. You know, we do the night prayer together, and we combine them with the rosary. And so it's a really important prayer for priests, is that how we sanctify the day. And it's an obligation for us. You know, the And when we go to the monastery, like Ricardo, we will do soon, and we will do that on one day only, on August 4th. One of the beauty in the, in the monastic life is that everything centers around the liturgy. You know, sometimes we plan our day according to our work schedule. But in the monastery, things is planned around the prayer time. You know, you have the mass, you have the prayer time, you know, that, and the things center around the liturgy, because everything centers around God. Everybody there is to seek God first. So that's the beauty about in the monastery. So, you know, one thing we have to ask Ricardo to do is that when you do pray the office, remember us, especially when you do the vigil, you know, in the month have vigil around 7:15. And it is a vigil in the monastery, actually in the abbey, they combine the office of reading and the night prayer into one. So that's, it's called the vigil. So they combine two offices into one. So the time you say the Salve Regina will be almost the same time we do the Salve Regina here when we do our prayer meeting. Because we start our night prayer at 7 o'clock, we come up with the rosary. So when we finish, it's around the time when you finish your vigil.
So
when you do the vigil, you remember us, okay? So, and then also another one he mentioned is about priestly seal, you know, not of surface. And he talking about that when we have sometimes we will find ourselves lacking seal, there's some signal there. Some signal that things not going right. The first one he say is too much sleep. And he joke, you know, devotion to Ali of the pillow. So too much sleep. Missing appointments, not returning calls, postponing obligations. You know, and then also just stay in your room behind closed door, avoiding other lest they bother us. Fleeing from people and responsibilities. So he also knew some trouble priest. You know, he mentioned a priest, you know, after breakfast, you know, told the secretary he was going on calls, got to his car, drove up a block, parked it, sneaked back to the rectory in his room, locked the door until supper. Not right, something not right. And then also being too wrapped up in books, TV or hobby. He said two hobbies popular today can go into extreme easily, computers and cooking. And he said nothing wrong with either as long as they enhance our priestly zeal and make us more effective. And he also mentioned one priest at home tell his people how simply he lives by not having a housekeeper, and then reminds them he cannot be disturbed between 4 to 7 p.m. daily since he's cooking. Something wrong there. Extend the cocktail hours, drinking more than usual. So, you know, so it's don't gossip here. Okay. So it's important. It's important that we watch our life, that we not become, you know, lazy, you know, but we actually, you know, zealous in our prayer, in our service, in our, you know, doing something constructive, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, we need time to relax, we need time to sit back, you know, but also we have to be, watch that it not become excessive, not to be lazy.
Moderate.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a pretty good meeting. Yeah.